Caller, we're in the catbird seat.
Catbird seat.
If it's on euros, then we have to like suck up to the euro. It's not as favorable of an exchange rate, and that's why we went to that war. It didn't have to do with oil. The motherfuckers have to sell oil.
No.
They have dates. That's the second. Their second economy is dates. And I know you have like crates and sacks of dates, and everybody craves dates. You know, we need those like hell.
Yeah.
We just got piles and piles of them. We're hoarding them. There's the Date Act of 1946 ensures that we have more, you know, for our national security, enough dates. What are they going to fucking sell? Sand? You know? So the thing is, they're going to sell the oil. It's not about oil.
I didn't think it was about oil.
It's about markets. And what benefits the people and what they know in the back of their head, even though no one will admit it, is that by blowing up people, it's blood and it's bombs, and that's what keeps our dollar strong. Our dollar is based on blood and violence. That's what makes our dollar valuable. And it's actually the only thing.
That okay, and okay.
Like Microsoft. But other than that, that's it.
This is Bennett, and I'm sitting here with my friend Chris Michaels. This is Kill Radio. This is our Thursday news hour. When I do interviews with people, I want to talk about hope. See, I think there's so much despair in the news, and I think that there is an attempt to keep people in their place all the time by overloading them, giving them a lot of entertainment, and then overloading the world with bad news. So people just want to stay isolated from each other and sit around and watch their DVDs and fumble with their plasma screen TVs and go to their work supporting the oil industry and the other markets out there. And here's Kill Radio, our little pathetic, tiny little signal here on the internet, killradio.org, where we're trying to go under what the regular media does. And I don't know. I thought I'd have Chris in because I think his story's a good one, but I don't know if he's interested in talking about himself. Hey, hi, Chris. It's Bennett.
Hi, Bennett. Go Kill Radio.
Things are changing for you, right? You've just moved out of one place into another place.
Yeah. Koreatown. I'm on my own again.
When I first met Chris about it was probably close to 10 years ago. You were the most unrepentant druggie I had ever met.
Yeah.
You would climb when somebody died, when your neighbor died, you climbed in the window and took all of his medications off of the bedside table.
And I also tried to take his checkbook and make checks out to me because I figured he wouldn't need the money.
I stole his television, so.
Wow. He doesn't need that either.
That's right. But his mom could have taken it.
Right.
But Chris was living over here in Silver Lake, right across the street from a school, from a grade school. Grade school?
One of the nicer places I've lived in California, really.
And so his roommate was growing some of the best marijuana I'd found out here in California. And David's gone now. And then Chris moved in with David. And shortly thereafter, Chris began to experiment. Well, you'd probably been doing it for a while, but you began to go down and buy balloons of black tar heroin.
Yeah. I always liked opiates. And I always liked the thump instead of the bump.
And now David, who was growing the marijuana, was not a rampant druggie, at least in my experience of him. He hardly even smoked the pot, but he grew it to sell to make a little bit of money. And Chris shows up, and shortly thereafter, the two of you started more than dabbling in heroin, and junkiedom beckoned.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, I've been using drugs in one form or another for 30 years.
Yeah.
And usually my pattern was, like, I get involved with something heavy, like an opiate, and then go chill out and get on the Courvoisier and Bud maintenance program. But the fact is, it was always some kind of like getting high. And for me, when I started using, I did it for fun.
Right, right.
And I know that all people all talk about different reasons that they start using drugs. And at some point, and they talk about you cross that line where it becomes something other than an entertainment and goes over into a full-time occupation, like a job.
Yeah.
And I think I blurred past that line. I didn't even notice it went by because I was very enthusiastic about using drugs. I thought that the way to live is to alter your consciousness.
Right.
And if the world is a terrible place, at least in my head, it can be a party all the time.
This is the isolationism that I was mentioning before.
Well, some drugs are very social, and there's the whole drug culture, which is kind of like a thing where another thing it gives is an identity.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have four people in the room and there's some drugs on the table, you have something to focus your attention on. Now, once the drugs are gone, then, you know, everybody splits and, you know, goes off to greener pastures. But the whole thing about the drug culture is a way to acquire an identity.
Uh-huh.
And so that's another thing.
I mean, famously, Nico loved the fact that she was a junkie. She loved the fact that that made her different from everything around her. That she, even though she wore the same clothes all the time and she was filthy and never took a bath and all that, she identified herself with the smell of cooking junk.
Wow.
That was the beauty of her life and made her special. And then when she kicked, finally, she fell off a bicycle and got killed.
Hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I think is appealing about heroin especially is the pain of withdrawal.
Ooh.
And I really think that people, heroin addicts especially, do crave that because it gives you something to do. It's something to focus on. And if you're, as long as you're like horribly sick, you don't really have to deal with anything else.
Right, right.
So it's pretty much an occupation. The thing about addiction, I was reading a book, like a 1906 book. It's called Diseases of the Will. And they talk about the different types of, you know, mental afflictions people have. And one chapter in there was about addiction. And what the guy talks about is that something that becomes an idea in the corner of your mind when you start, you know, early on in drug use, after a while, you know, covers your mind and splats it like a manhole cover, to where the whole purpose of living and what you think about and do all the time is trying to get drugs and using drugs and getting more drugs, and it becomes an obsession. And that's where I think the problem is, because I was just talking to my friend. I was saying, well, I'm going to get a phone in a couple of weeks. Thanks to David and his sex line calls, I'm in trouble with Pac Bell.
Well, was he doing heroin and making sex phone calls?
I don't know. I think that was just when we were drunk. Because when you're doing heroin, you don't need sex.
No, you don't.
You don't really need anything except probably air. And that's the thing most people die from.
I will admit that I spent some, because I was in contact with you guys, I was actually enabling you, because I would drive you down to pick up your heroin.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and then I would get a gram of marijuana for that. And so I dabbled a little bit in the heroin too, maybe five or six times, not very many. I determined that I wouldn't go and get it myself, because I knew that if I started getting it myself, I would probably become a junkie.
But my point is, it's not about heroin. It's not about any particular drug. It's about drug addiction. And, you know, I'm not against drugs.
Uh-huh.
I think they're great. And they do people a lot of good. And the whole drug prohibition thing is wrong. Started by do-gooding liberals back in the day when the guy would come home drunk. Prohibition started by these people that were addicted to hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this unholy alliance between the do-gooding hygiene people and the religious people who don't think anybody should have any fun at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which is our politics today, if you look at it, like Lieberman.
Yeah.
He's the worst of both worlds, but they're all like that, blathering on about our children and all these government laws that try to protect us from ourselves. You know, I think everyone should just mind their own business. But for me in particular, what I came to see, because finally I got arrested.
Well, I wanted to briefly mention that one night you scored, and if you had just not gone to buy a carton of milk,
yeah,
you probably wouldn't have been caught up in a sweep.
But I would have been caught eventually.
Well, and then you got caught again later.
And then that was the problem. So I was offered a deal where, you know, I had two felony charges. I could have either gone to prison, which I don't like, because the whole idea about being confined doesn't appeal to me. Some people don't mind that. It's another, you know, I'm not like one of these institutionalized guys.
Right.
I like walking around in the sunshine, smoking cigarettes, looking at girls. And at midnight, if I want some Haagen-Dazs, I like to be able to go get it. In prison, you can't do that stuff. So they gave me a chance to go to this program. And I didn't like the program. I thought they were all crazy. They said a whole bunch of crazy stuff. But the fact was, by being abstinent for maybe 6 months, I was able to get far away enough from using to really take an honest look at how my life was and my relationship to using drugs. And that's when I realized that I had a problem, in that my will was obliterated, annihilated. And you can make an argument about, do we even have a will? And if you look at what we do during the day, you know, and try to pinpoint the times where we actually have the act of volition, that balancing act between impulse, I want to do something, and inhibition, maybe I shouldn't, and that push and pull between that, and actually make a decision based on that, it's very, very rare. Maybe like a few seconds a day, you might run into a situation. Most of the things we do are automatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we fart and eat and breathe, and I get up in the get coffee and read the newspaper in the morning. It's not because I'm making now I'm going to decide. It's because that's my habit to do that. And, you know, I get up and I have a routine. So I'm not really thinking during the day about, is my free will operating here? And am I making like this decision that's balancing between impulse and imposition? Because most of the time, I just go along with my routine.
Right. But the routine no longer includes drugs.
Well, but the drug addiction is the routine.
Uh-huh.
That is the be all and end all, and it becomes the most important thing. And I continued to use drugs even when I had bad consequences.
Right.
Like going to jail. And all kinds of crap.
But when you went to jail for 6 months.
I didn't go to jail for 6 months. I went for 50 days and then got out because they gave me that deal. And then the thing was, I wanted to use when I got out.
You actually said to me at one point, since they were going to test you every week, that you thought you might buy a bag of heroin once a week for half a year and then have 26 bags of heroin waiting for you.
See, that's when I was still insane, though.
Uh-huh.
Because can you imagine sitting around in a room with your drug of choice, a whole drawer full of the drug of choice, and like, oh, I better check that to make sure it's not going bad. Oh, maybe I'm just like going to sniff it. You know, maybe I can, you know, that wouldn't work. But that was an attempt to try to get some power over the obsession. And one of the things that they taught in this program is that basically if I'm an addict, I don't have any power over the obsession. And the thing is to stop trying to control or stop using. You just have to basically give up on the idea that you can stop using.
You know, you just said something that made me think about something that has nothing to do with drugs, about things that happened to me in my life, personal things that I'm obsessed with, that I have no control over, and that I'm lost in an obsession there. Because it's not about drugs. It's about addiction. It's about need. How you want to identify yourself.
Well, what I'm specifically talking about is drugs. And I think that if you listen to Dr. Drew, he breaks it down into, are you having negative consequences? Because everybody's going to be into something. There's sex, there's food, there's shopping. People are workaholics. People gamble. I guess that's money. And, you know, people want escapism and they want a thrill. But when it becomes something that is causing, like, horrible consequences in your life, and yet a person continues to do that, then you've fallen over into the thing where it's an addiction. And for me, to be off of drugs, I look at drug addiction now as kind of like a slavery. I've signed up to be like a galley slave to always going out and getting drugs and using them, no matter what. And it's actually what I've come to see, it's a subhuman form of existence, kind of like a bug. Pretty much like ants have this hive mentality and they just go along with the program. And I was no different from an ant asking you to ferry me to MacArthur Park. I was just like an ant going for like the cube of sugar, mindless. And to be free of that and to be able to get back some power of volition, and to try to inject value into my life, like what do I think is important? And actually, the most important thing and what separates us from the beast, is that we get off on what's completely unnecessary. We're able to look at oblivion and laugh at it. We're able to do art, which the definition of art is completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
I think that's what separates us from an animal, our frivolity and our concern with appearances.
Well, so I've only got a minute or so left here that I want to do this.
I don't know how much of a message of hope this was.
I think quite a bit, because you're talking about self-control and breaking out of the machine, breaking out of being an ant.
I'm talking about personal responsibility. The last thing, hope. You know, that hope was the last thing left in Pandora's box.
Yeah.
And all the other afflictions and evils of the world were flying around, but we're always stuck with hope. And it's kind of like a madness, I think, a form of madness. But, you know, the enthusiasm comes from the Greek meaning God within us. So I think it is all a kind of a madness. Thank you. Thank you, Bennett.
Well, thank you, Chris. This has been Chris Michaels here on Kill Radio this morning on the Thursday News Hour. One of the things I'll note is that Chris didn't become a Christian. He didn't lose his...
I'm an unrepentant Catholic. I'm showing him my Pope medal right now.
Pope
should run everything.
He's just as troublemaking as ever. He's just as sharp as ever. He didn't lose any. Maybe you lost a little bit for a while you were doing it.
I lost some hair and some teeth.
I lost a lot of teeth. But basically, the same still feisty spirit is there. You're an X-ray technician now, working for...
Irradiating the masses.
Anyway, this has been an interview here on Bennett's Thursday News Hour. Thank you very much, Chris. I don't know, anything left to say? Nothing left to say. Thanks for listening, folks. Remember, you too could become a heroin addict and save yourself. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Kill Radio. Addendum and update. That was recorded August 21, 2003.
Chris has now been clean for over 6 years. So, just for your information, this is Kill Radio, the Kill Radio News. Don't forget to kill your friends.